You're listening to the Business of Pharmacy podcast with me, your host, Mike Kelzer. Zach, Sebastian, and Aaron, for those that haven't come across you guys online, introduce yourself and tell our listeners what we're talking about today.
My name is Zach Cherico, the founder and CEO of Zillspace.
My name is Sebastian Endicott. I'm director of business development here at Zillspace.
My name is Aaron Hanna. I am the clinical sales manager for Zillspace. We help independent pharmacy grow their business. Really what it comes down to is getting more scripts in the door for them, acting as an outsourced sales and marketing team, going out to the market, creating those tangible relationships with physicians, get them to start sending scripts to the pharmacy, and then really help manage that relationship over the long term to keep that flow of scripts coming in the door.
So when you guys go out, you're representing the pharmacy. I imagine at some point there's going to be a time where you've got double people in the market. You've got this pharmacy that's trying to do this, and you're almost hitting the same people that are trying to do, I don't know, let's say a home healthcare place hires you or something. Do you come across that ever, or is the sales rep that's going into the doctor, do they have the pharmacy written on their face, or is it more of a representative in general to solve doctors' problems?
No, so we're representing that pharmacy. Yeah, 100% representing their pharmacy. Each pharmacy we work with is going to have a designated rep that's going to handle their account, that's going to represent them. They identify as a clinical salesperson or a member of XYZ Pharmacy. So they never know who Zillspace is. We're always in line with their brand, what they're going after. And I think it really is important to have that close relationship with our clients where we actually ingrain within their business. We're on calls with them on a weekly, bi-weekly basis as scripts are coming in the door, as problems are happening out there with the clients we're already working with. They're trying to land new clients for them. So yeah, it's very much being a representative of that specific pharmacy and making sure that's how we're portraying ourselves to potential clients for them.
And then are you guys in person or are you video or audio with the doctor's offices?
So it's definitely a combination. Here in New Jersey, we do have some boots on the grounds for some of our clients. We have clients out as far away as Missouri, Oregon, Washington. So obviously in situations like that, we're going to jump on a Zoom call like this with the physician, kind of go through that pitch with them. We also have set it up in the past where we jump on Zoom and they have a pharm tech there, or the pharmacist comes in person and we kind of double team that physician office. But the majority of our work is remote, and everybody, not everybody, but some people think, hey, can you really get results on a Zoom call with a physician? And you know what I find is, yeah, the stats are there that having a Zoom call with a physician, those team members, you can really get those results that you're looking for.
Guys, I don't care about the results once you're there. I can picture that. Especially if you have a physician that's dedicated some time to it, they probably have that hole in their resources that they're trying to fill. How the hell, though, do you get a doctor to sit on a Zoom call, especially if you're not feeding them?
A lot of times we are doing some type of lunch or breakfast with those offices. Yeah.
With the Zoom call?
Yeah. Correct.
How do you do that?
So very similar to what we set up here today, we'd send out a Zoom link to them. They'd have somebody from their team get set up. And believe it or not, it actually works out pretty well sometimes with having the whole team there at once. So sometimes there's two or three physicians, the MAs are there, the OM are all in one room and we're having a conversation versus, all right, I speak to the doctor, then I have to go to another room to speak to this MA, and there's five different conversations going on.
So you're hiring in the food, or the food's being delivered, let's say you're the state away, they're bringing it in for that time.
Correct. Yep.
Now I feel like I should have bought you guys something.
Next time.
And then it also really gives that pharmacy owner the ability, because we can then share that virtual lunch that is recorded. Really the goal of what we drive is giving them intelligence. And so you're dealing with a lot of business and scientific minded people. People that when they went to school for 4 to 6 years, they were pretty much all math and science. And so that's kind of how we break down business, is we take the scientific method of business. And so everyone that we work with gets a report. They get to see who we spoke to. They get to see what the result was of that conversation. So if we speak to Joe at this doctor's office or Amanda at this doctor's office, the pharmacy owner can call right on top of that person, ask for that individual. And there's that level of continuity. The intelligence of why someone is not doing business with someone is often more important than why someone is doing business with someone. Because if it is controllable, then you can go back to the drawing board. You can take that intelligence back to the pharmacy owner. You can take that intelligence back to just the general business owner. And that's where we go to problem solve. That's where we can change our hypothesis of, okay, we thought that this specialty for this compound med would be a great campaign, but we spoke to these 15 different provider groups. This is what their feedback was. Was it a customer service thing? Was it a pricing thing? Was it a copay thing? What exactly was it? Was it controllable? Is it something we can change? Or is it something that business owner just has to accept as a factor of their business and something that they just have to deal with as they do go to scale? And every single niche of pharmacy has its own setback. Like if you look at specialty versus compounding, as you build a national specialty pharmacy, contracting is extremely important. If you're building a national compound pharmacy, pricing is very important. And so you just have different factors. You have different issues and different types of niches of pharmacy. And I think a huge piece of what we do is really after we go out to the market is how we evaluate that and then optimize really for campaign number two and making sure that those statistics are there. So that way there's no romantic behavior necessarily throughout building a business. We just try to create that algorithm. So then that way they see the more numbers of touches here is going to equal a number at the end of that funnel.
How do you know when you've overstayed your welcome on a video call to the physician's office? Do they start to fidget? And how much time do you typically have when you're with a medical office? Paint that out for me a little bit.
Every doctor is a little bit different. For the most part, they want to come in, have the conversation, and get back to what they're doing. So you can't have a 20, 30 minute conversation. For the most part, I've had them, but it's few and far between where you have those long, drawn out conversations. So when you jump in there, first thing is asking good questions from the start, finding out what problems maybe they're having with certain patients, certain prescriptions, what their current prescribing pattern looks like, and really getting to the point of being a problem solver. And then you end it by really finding out who your key person is going to be there at that office. Is it Cindy at the front desk? Is it Jen the OM? Who do I need to be contacting when something goes wrong, when a prescription needs to be filled, whatever that situation is? But from a timing standpoint, a lot of times once they jump on, it's maybe 5-10 minutes.
You guys probably hit this at a pretty good time because pre-COVID, going video seemed almost like a little bit cheap. I don't know if cheap's the right word, but it meant that you couldn't travel there or you didn't want to take the time to travel there. And some people were familiar with the video conferencing, but not everybody. But then people started getting sick of video things. I didn't because I don't do much of it, but I know people got sick of the whole video thing and wanted the warm touch. And that's where the idea of the sales reps in the past would provide the food and stuff like that, kind of that warmth. And so it seems like a pretty cool setup that you guys are kind of merging the two of those, but in a positive way.
You know, if someone needs to have an in-person conversation and we're a little bit further down the line, I think we've always been willing to take the trip. And whether that's the pharmacy driving, we have a client in Maine that they drive 2 hours to a doctor's office. We actually just hired a salesperson who worked at Pfizer, GSK. And so they worked on a lot of inside roles. And then they had an opportunity to work for a pharmaceutical commercialization company where they're essentially the pharmaceutical company that is the outsourced sales company. He was doing in person for the first time. And his feedback on it was 50% of my day, 70% of my day is driving. So I'll drive an hour to go see this office. And if they're busy, then all right, now I have to go to a different office. And so about half of their day was wasted just on driving in terms of gas, in terms of just trying to get to where you're trying to go versus being able to call, say, 100 people, set up those meetings, have a schedule. For example, like we have a couple clients out in Pittsburgh and we can do in person through kind of that focus. And so we do the same thing in New York. We do the same thing in New Jersey. And so our goal would be to have an in-person structure. I think there's an appropriate time in all business cases, even outside of pharmacy, where shaking someone's hand, looking someone in the eye, especially when we're talking about trusting pharmacies or healthcare providers as well. And when they're given access to a patient to fill their scripts, they become their patient as well. And so I think building that trust has become a lot easier because of COVID. But there's always going to be people, regardless of age or experience, that they want to do business in person or have some level of familiarity. And I think that level of customer support is, especially when things go wrong, because in healthcare, things always go wrong. That's part of what it is. And so I think rising in those types of challenges, being able to answer the phone is to be available is definitely something that we advocate for really across the board. And it makes selling and marketing a pharmacy that much easier. Like we were just talking to a pharmacy benefit manager. They answer 99% of all of their calls on the first ring. So how do you argue with that type of customer service? And so that becomes very attractive to go out and sell it. And going back to really the competitiveness of either the product or the niche, we've also had certain products and niches where we're just calling the office and then we schedule a lunch or breakfast out a month, but then the marketing materials goes to the provider and they're like, we need to talk to this person right now because they have a need. They have 10 patients that have X need for whatever product that we're speaking to. And so there's really just, again, meeting people where they are, if they have the urgency, if they have a problem where they have the patient base, those things are typically qualified to have good pharmacy discussions. Now, to not say that there aren't doctor's offices that will basically just take the free lunch because they want to make sure their lunch is covered every day, that definitely happens as well. I think everyone on this team at some point and the majority of all pharmaceutical reps have had a very bad experience with a doctor's office, or maybe the lunch wasn't delivered on time, or maybe the food wasn't prepared properly. I know that it's happened to me. I've had a business card thrown in my face 8 years ago. It happens. And so I think being very empathetic to what is going on. Are you the first person to call that day? Are you the 100th person to try and call that day? And so it comes down to being a human and driving with that level of empathy. And if you are getting kind of a defensive person and being respectful of their time, it is very much what we try to do.
What is your success rate of getting through the door?
So every client that we've ever represented, we've connected them to opportunity of qualified individuals that they were wanting to speak. So for example, if a pharmacy wanted to speak to every urologist in New Jersey, we would mount a campaign and then we would get them anywhere from say 30 to 50 meetings, depending on, because now you're getting into scope of work, you're getting into budget. You know, there's going to be a huge difference between someone paying us, say, $3,000 a month versus $15,000 a month.
How much effort you're going to put into and how many recalls and things like that.
Exactly.
It might be higher for some of your clients than others. There's a variability there.
So here's a perfect example. So I'm from New Jersey. Sometimes I speak quick. If I'm calling on, say, Missouri or Texas, I may unintentionally come off a little rude. Not because I'm trying to, but just because we're from New Jersey. This is how we express ourselves.
One of the guests that was on, I said, Chris, I'm sure you're a great salesman because you've got the Southern charm, a little bit of the Southern accent and things like that. And he's like, well, Mike, you're just saying that because you're kind of in the Midwest. If you were from New York, somebody would throw you out after the first three words because they think you don't know anything because you're too slow. So a lot of it has to do with where you are in the country.
Yeah.
Right. And so when you're calling on, say, half the country, it's very different. So pharmacy calling in New Jersey for urology is very different than a pharmacy in Texas. You have different levels of competition. You have different competitors in those local markets. You also have different national players that are focusing on certain parts of the country. That is all very different. And so, I mean, what we see from a guarantee standpoint, we always get meetings set up for our clients.
You don't always get a setup, right? If a pharmacy comes to you and say, I want you to set things up with these 10 offices, you don't always get a meeting with those 10.
We have to have a much larger...
You're talking bigger numbers.
Correct.
Out of that bigger number, what's your success rate in actually getting in the office? How many of them are letting you in the door enough to even buy lunch for them?
So our scope of work per seat for our sales engagement services is 2,500 touches annually. Right. And so out of that, if you say on average, what would you say, guys, 40 meetings set per year?
I would say 35 to 40 would be a good number.
So you guys call up 1,000 offices. You're getting like 10 that say, sure, we'll have a meeting with you.
Well, they have to have some level of qualification. We have to make sure they're writing the prescriptions that pharmacy is looking. So if we're talking about compounding erectile dysfunction medications, we would ask some questions there, or else we're just setting up unqualified meetings. We have to make sure there's a level of qualification. We take that piece very seriously, because if we set up 25 meetings and none of them are qualified, that then does reflect on what we do. So something that we make sure that is done is that, all right, what are the 3 to 5 questions that we have to make sure that we're asking in any niche of pharmacy? And you also have totally different reasons as to why business is maybe not available. And so there are some states, unfortunately, like I'm going to use Maine as an example. We had someone reach out to us. If someone wanted us to do Maine dermatology for them, it's just not something that we would do because there's like 20 dermatologists in Maine and we have a partner up in Maine, but we don't target dermatology for them. So there are states that our services are not best used. Now we can still advise someone to run that campaign and give them all the tools. It's just not something that we would be able to necessarily help them with. So we love big data sets because we know that the algorithm is going to run because we have an algorithm for our business and our services. There's also an algorithm for our client services. And so having that scientific method and that business science of, hey, what does the report say? What does the data say? What do the recordings look like? So blending that qualitative data as well as that quantitative data to really kind of drive those results. I wish that we could set up meetings where every provider is going to send. But you have like institutions, health systems, for example, something that came out of COVID. A lot of health systems have vertically integrated their own pharmacy. I think overall, everywhere, margins are a little bit lower in the healthcare industry right now. And so due to that pricing pressure, there's a lot of things going on in 340B right now. And so there's a lot of changes where institutions are getting their own pharmacy. So 5-7 years ago, you could walk into a hospital, like we're just outside of Pennsylvania and or Philadelphia. And so at some point, I've worked with almost every institution in Philadelphia. But today, if I had those exact same services, they brought that in-house. And so that goes back to what is even available in that market. Similarly, 5 years ago in New Jersey, there was a certain price point for erectile dysfunction medications. If I took that same pricing and applied it to this market, we would get no business.
When you make the first connection from your office, is that a phone call?
Our first point of contact is always going to be a phone call anytime we reach out to an office. And the big piece there is, like we said before, are they even qualified for us to send marketing materials? Is it even something that we need to have a conversation on? So that initial point, and a lot of times that's talking to a receptionist, that's talking to the OM, that we're finding out that information before it's even worth having a conversation with them. Sometimes it takes 3, 4, 5 calls before we even set up a meeting with the office. Sometimes you call, the OM's not there, and then we do this back and forth for a week or two before we even get that information to set something up. So sometimes it does take a little bit.
Aaron, I imagine that has to do too with someone's budget, right? If someone's got a bigger budget, they might want 8 touches to even set something up, and somebody else might want a couple just to get the low-hanging fruit kind of thing.
Correct. And I think the more important piece there with budget is the overall outreach, right? So our sales team is still extremely trained that if they think this is going to be a good target, they're going to hound dog that one office to try to get that meeting set, right? So the difference there is if you have 5 salespeople all targeting 5 different accounts, well, you're going to get that result that much faster. But regardless, we're not just calling one time, oh, I didn't get a hold of them. Oh, they were at lunch. I'm just going to keep moving on. We're going to call them back later on that day, maybe the next day, until we get that information we need.
Your client base, is it all pharmacy?
No. So we do have some telemedicine companies. We have a lot of pharmacy consultants. We do have some non-healthcare companies. Like we just did marketing for a cupcake bakery as well. So we have even a car detailing company we do marketing for as well.
Out of everything you did, if you had to break off and do something, like only one thing, is there another line that is interesting to you / lucrative and so on besides pharmacy?
I think remote patient monitoring. So you have like connected devices for weight loss. So like an obese patient, there's a number of telemedicine companies that are developing basically where you can speak to a provider. I think the way that healthcare is going, if we were going to start something, the niche healthcare offering of directly to commercial clients or directly to health plans. Like we have a client that specializes in pediatrics and she has a cost savings algorithm for cost avoidance as well as cost savings. And so she goes directly to Medicare, Medicaid run facilities to show how their prescription interventions and can save them money. I think in pharmacy right now, there's a lot of pricing pressure because the clinical expertise is being bundled with the dispensing. And I think that we're starting to see where there's CPT codes that a physician can be reimbursed for through a collaborative practice agreement with a pharmacist for, say, diabetes programs, high blood pressure, obesity, the older population, they don't want to go to a nursing home. They don't want to go to assisted living facilities. They want to stay in their house as long as possible. And I think the young generation, if they don't have to leave their house to get care, I think that's where we're necessarily going, where they're going to see a provider either virtually. If there's a diagnostic that's going to be required or a prescription that needs to be required, is that going to be careered in live time? And so some of these pathways are already being developed. I think they're on their way to being perfected. And what's unique about these kind of pathways is that they very much are closed pathways, especially when you're talking on the commercial side of things, where you're going to get one telemedicine provider that's using one pharmacy. When you run cash-based programs, you could do this. And so access becomes that much more restrictive. And so if you don't have these types of strategic partnerships, you're going to be completely out of being able to even attract those types of opportunities. No different than a specialty pharmacy not having any commercial contracts. So if they have to completely depend on Medicare or Medicaid contracts, they might have some serious limitations on being able to scale.
Each of you pick out three verbs you do each day, and what percentage of that are you doing?
Yeah, so for me, I'd say meetings are probably close to 40-50%.
With these guys?
Unfortunately, yes. Not all the time. A lot of more meetings with the clients and doctor's offices, leading a lot of those lunches and stuff like that. So that's a big piece of my time. I would say probably another 20% in calls.
Sales calls to hopefully gain access and so on.
Correct. And then I'd say the remainder is really working with our sales team, doing trainings, doing management, making sure we're effective out there in the field.
In sales, in terms of not selling your product, but selling to the end product.
So a combination of both, right?
Gotcha.
So it's our outreach, and then each client we work with has their own little niche that we're targeting for them. So making sure that the salesperson's effective in that niche for that client, across all niches and all clients, and then looking at our services as well.
I'd have to echo that a little bit there, except for the training aspect. I'm not involved in the training of the sales team, but I go on LinkedIn, Facebook, I make connections, networking.
We like to have Sebastian hunt.
I'm a hunter.
He's a hunter.
Yeah, I'm the hunter. I love hunting.
You're the guy that scrapes up B-list podcasts. And
No, I enjoy it.
What else do you do, Sebastian?
Yeah, meetings as well, calls as well, and a similar note to as Aaron was just saying there, for clients as well as to establish ourselves in our market and make sure that we're known.
I would say about 50% of the time is meetings. It's been a little different each year that we've been operating. We are self-funded, so being 4.5 years in business, part of our celebration is just still being in business.
Good for you.
And so as we kind of grow, 50% of my time is pretty much in meetings. Someone asked me this recently, and I was like, my breakdown is basically phone calls, meetings, and thinking. I really can't discount the amount of time that I think I just spend thinking. And what's difficult to quantify what the results are of something like that is that you can't just say, all right, I'm going to carve out this 45 minutes on a Tuesday for thinking. It could just come to you some level of inspiration. It also could be forced. It could be, hey, this one person gives you bad news and now you have to sit there and think about said problem and then attack it in 5 different ways. And so I think the first couple years was more of a reactive, what was going to happen as each day happens. I think now we have the luxury where I can think out, what are we going to be doing in 2024? What are we going to be doing in 2025? And reverse engineering to that. So a lot of my time is definitely on thought process, that scientific method in business science. If we can track it, we will. If we can map to it, we will. If we can create an algorithm off it, we will. And just really thinking in different frameworks, having conversations. What is a great luxury for us is that pretty much all of our clients are CEOs and business owners themselves. So we don't partner with companies, we partner with entrepreneurs. And so now we're starting to see the full cycle where we have a client that maybe they're the CEO of this, but then they're also an angel investor in this company over here.
Right.
And they also have a connection that their buddy owns this company. And then they know this person that just started this company. And so getting that word of mouth out is kind of increasing our business. So my current thought process is, how are we going to hire? I think we have 4 sales positions currently open. So that's currently what's taking up a lot of current time.
Is your whole business virtual?
We are all remote. A lot of that is really from when my career first started. I was a specialty pharmacy rep when I was 21 years old. So I was always remote. And so going from that position to a more executive position in a pharmacy, the pharmacy was always 1 to 2 hours away. And so my whole career was always remote. And so now this is my 9th year doing it. And so to not be remote would almost be weird for me. Like, there was a salesperson that we just hired and she was working in a provider office and she's like, this is fantastic. I literally have an extra hour a day just because I don't have to go drive that extra hour a day. So we utilize definitely a lot of that time. Like, Sebastian uses it to spend more time with his sons. And so I think everyone kind of uses that. Like, Aaron just goes and chips golf balls in his backyard and that's why he's gotten so good at chipping. So I think everyone uses that time a little differently, but we have full intention of being a remote company. I mean, we've been remote since 2018. I think it allows you to attract talent, but it definitely sometimes makes it a little difficult culture-wise, because there is definitely tremendous value in just being a part of certain experiences, whether it's a meeting or something along that line, just being a part of more conversations. I can definitely see that as something that needs to be navigated a lot more closely with a remote team.
Do you see anything innovative for us humans coming down the pike for that in terms of solving that? I guess it's a dilemma. I guess it's either stay home or not stay home. But do you see anything coming down the way of solving that social issue, solving that team issue that you hear people echo what you're saying, Zach, about it's harder remotely? Or do you think people just kind of give that up? There's no answer to it. Like, homeschool people do it. Like, they have their home schools. But then they've realized they missed out. So they've got, like, on Wednesday morning, 20 of them meet and wait in line for lunch somewhere or something like that. What do you think the industry is going to do for that?
That's a great question. I mean, I think overall, every healthcare company operates a little bit differently. You definitely get people that are a patient first. I met with a pharmacy benefit manager last week, and they were leading with what their principles are, what their culture is like, and was even telling me as they're pitching me about their services, they're telling me about how they take once a month, their entire team gets together on a Thursday. People will be off and they still take the time to like plug they into like those calls. Yeah. And so I think webinars are really a popular thing to do, whether it's an alcoholic beverage webinar.
Hanging out with everybody, but everybody having a drink or something like that.
Almost like a virtual happy hour. It's been a part of that. Those ones are kind of like a bit of an eye roll sometimes because it can be, you're trying too hard. Like,
it's kind of like in high school. I went to a parochial school and I think the girls had the uniform, the guys didn't, but we had to wear a certain kind of pants. Like, they couldn't be like jean material. And then like once a month, it would be like Help the Needy Friday. So if you brought like a buck, you could wear jeans.
Yeah.
And senior teacher, guy or gal, in front of the room wearing jeans, it just...
I didn't quite do it.
I can't... You guys, I can see it on your faces. It's just like, oh, I didn't need to see that.
We have some culinary artists on our team. And so we do have a jams and treats. So we love music and we like eating food, as I'm sure a lot of people do. And so we have a Teams channel that's a song that you were taking your kids to school and set the mood for the day of whatever it is. Is it a good? Is it bad? Is it fun? Who's giving you energy today? Hey, share that and maybe the rest of the team. So when you have a bunch of different people, everyone has different music tastes. Everyone has different food tastes. Someone's posting a bunch of Italian food. Someone's posting a bunch of Mexican food. And so you get not only a little bit of inspiration, but you get to see kind of what type of music. Like, I think I'm yet to post anything that was made music wise in the last 20 years. I like diving into what was hot in classic rock in the 80s, 90s, and post kind of from there. And so naturally, then someone will be like, oh, I played this song and I was thinking of you. So that was kind of something along that line. I think that music and food, as people just bond.
Out of the pharmacy owners that you seem to have a little bit of a relationship with, but then they drop off, whether they don't actually hire you or they hire you, but only for a bit and they drop off, what would you say the business situation that they would drop off?
Really, the only time that we ever seen something go bad is because someone has a tremendously competitive marketplace. You had a pharmacy owner that thinks, hey, I gave these people a dollar and they're going to flip a switch that they've had access to this whole time. I've been in business for over 10 years, but I paid them a dollar and they're just going to bring me all this business and it's just going to flow in. And so we don't have any magic bullets. We don't have any magical switches. And so that data of the entire process and really giving them that data would say having the right expectation. No different than if someone walks on the lot of a Honda dealership, you have a different expectation than someone that walks on the Lamborghini dealership. And that's not a dig on Honda. It's not speaking to the luxuriousness of Lamborghini, but it is a different expectation. And so different business owners have different expectations, whether it's because of experience, whether it's because of what they're looking for in their business, or whether it's because of their budget. We try to build very long-term relationships. And even just recently, we've had to say no to some people just because we're like, we just don't feel comfortable with it. For whatever reason that is, sometimes saying no is just as important as saying yes.
There's a lot of times I'll have a conversation with a pharmacy owner and I do have to tell them no. And a big piece a lot of times is what their competitive advantage is. Are they doing something that a physician office is going to say, hey, this is a great service, I want to send my patients to this? So if I have a conversation, you're not doing compounding, you're not doing compliance packaging, you're just a strict retail pharmacy that has really nothing competitive that can be sold, why is an office going to send a prescription 30 miles away from the office to a pharmacy that's not doing something competitive for them? So that's a big piece to a lot of pharmacies.
There's so many businesses that come out without their USP. And my thought is always like, unless you're opening a pharmacy up in, and let's say kind of any store, unless you're opening up that store in a physically brand new market, like somewhere that was desert before, but now it has houses, or you're coming in with a new product of an iPhone 20 years ago or whatever. What you have to realize is sometimes 100% of the market is being served. Maybe not great, but they are being served. And maybe those people would switch over if something was 20% better, but rarely is something 20% better. It might be 3% better. As you're saying, Zach, that's reality that you have to push through.
And even the default, speaking very simply, something that absolutely crushes me, regardless of what pharmacy we're potentially representing, is when a doctor says, oh, I just sent it to CVS.
And there's a warning to anybody trying to market something where when I come into a small town, or any town, I suppose, when I come into a town off the highway, I'm not going to stop at Joe's Burgers. I've never heard of them before, because McDonald's, well, in my old age, I've raised up my taste. I'm now, what's the
big
one?
Big Five Guys?
No, no, better than that. Culver's. No. Do you guys have Culver's out there? It's like a step above Wendy's, kind of like the Five Guys and Smash Burgers and all that. But there's no way in hell I'm going to stop at Joe's Burgers. I'm going to stop at one of these things we're mentioning on a scale of 1 to 100. Let's say it's a 50 of satisfaction, something like that. Joe's might be 90, but they might be 10. I might go in Joe's and, you know, they got workers with, you know, chest hair coming out, you know, and that's just the women. There's some rough places. And so pharmacies have to realize that if somebody doesn't know, they might pick you because you're small, but they might think you're a 10 on a scale of 100. They don't know. So that's where that marketing is so important.
And even as you mentioned, McDonald's, a great scenario of that. And especially when you talk to some smaller pharmacies where they're saying, that's just not something we prioritize. And I've heard this a dozen times of, well, we're a pharmacy in a small town and everyone already knows who we are. And it's like, okay, but are they all using your pharmacy? And marketing is to get people's attention. Sales is to get people's money. And so if you're not doing the marketing, you can't get anyone's attention. You can't do a deal with anyone, regardless if we're talking about pharmacy, if we're talking about pharmacy benefits, telemedicine, institutional health plans across the board. You have to get people's attention. And then from there, you build interest to get them to a decision and hopefully some level of action. But, you know, that's really the importance of marketing. And sometimes businesses die in obscurity.
I was listening to Bezos and he says some year Amazon won't be here. Will be eaten up. It's hard to believe. And you guys are too young to know the names of places that you would think the same thing, like Sears, Toys R Us. Who would ever think that? But look at someone as huge as Google. Who would think that even 3 months ago, people would be questioning Google's strength in the market? And here they're, I'm not saying they're nervous, but here you got ChatGPT, and it's like, everybody gets swallowed up eventually. It's hard to believe, but they do.
I think that's probably the more brilliant part of being in healthcare is that you've had these types of companies come in and try and disrupt. I was just reading an article last week. Amazon like had three healthcare failed ventures at this point, and they've pulled out. Their acquisition of PillPack is not gone to what they thought it was. That the entire executive team has quit at this point in time for PillPack. And so they came out with now this RX card offering. And now they tried to have an initiative with Berkshire Hathaway and JP Morgan. That failed as well. JP Morgan just launched another two initiatives for healthcare. And so I think Google is now technically they build a stop loss carrier. So they are coming into healthcare. I think they're just doing it in slightly different ways. I think they're going to leverage a lot of the technology that they already have built, that they can kind of repurpose those large data sets to get those into, as you mentioned, AI. I think that the next side of ChatGPT is then plugging into the exclusive proprietary data that each of these companies, the AI, is going to be based on. So like no one has access to Google's data except for Google. And so if they start underwriting stop loss for self-funded employers throughout the country, they're going to have access to only that data. So if they give a prompt to those AI engines, they're the only ones that are going to prompt that way. Same thing with Amazon, same thing with, say, Berkshire Hathaway on insurance. And so you have a lot of these players. I think there's definitely an overhype of how quickly it's going to happen, especially in healthcare. Things that I thought were going to happen 10 years ago still haven't really happened at this point. And so if you know the healthcare space, I think that's a huge specialized knowledge gap because you get a lot of, and I even see it in a lot of telemedicine startups right now. These are not pharmacy people. These are not healthcare people. These are Silicon Valley, very just know the language to get venture-backed funding. And we're hitting a little bit of a winter time with being able to raise funding with the way interest rates are. And so it's a difficult time to build a business. It's also an amazing time to build a business because you can kind of separate yourself without necessarily having to raise an obscene amount of dollars because we see companies that do raise that and then they still fail anyway.
We do some medical equipment at our store. And probably 15 years ago, there was this medical equipment from across the state. And they were going to make these medical stores the size of a Best Buy, something like that. Well, when you don't have someone that's living and breathing that, first of all, I mean, 90-year-old person has to walk across a parking lot that size. And if you guys run into each other at Best Buy, you're going to say, hey, Zach, oh, you got that new album, or what phone did you buy, or what computer are you looking at? Well, think about in like 40 years, you don't want to be asking Sebastian what size catheter he bought. And then you're saying, well, no, I got Depends instead of that. And Aaron's saying, you guys, you should just get a permanent whatever. But it's like, those aren't the things you want to do in a business. And I think people forget that. You want a smaller place to park close, run in, run out, be kind of anonymous. So not every, especially in healthcare, not everything scales as a lot of other products do.
I think that the retail pharmacy is changing tremendously. I've never seen more pharmacist entrepreneurs than right now. Between remote patient monitoring, between pharmacogenetics, between collaborative practice agreements, between being able to build cloud pharmacies, hub services, specialty pharmacies, there's just so many different avenues and you only need one to really kind of be successful. It just comes down to what specialized knowledge those individuals or individual has.
Well, Zach, Sebastian, and Aaron, thank you guys. That was fun. It's cool to look behind the curtain a little bit. That's interesting stuff.
Thanks so much for having us. I mean, I think this has been fantastic. Hopefully there's some thought-provoking material to just have people ask questions about what's going on in their business. A different perspective in terms of just different healthcare businesses is sometimes how problems get solved much faster. And so we very much appreciate this opportunity and look forward to hopefully talking to you soon again.
Take care, and I hope to talk again soon.
Awesome. Thanks, Mike. Thanks so much, Mike. Appreciate it.
You've been listening to the Business of Pharmacy podcast with me, your host, Mike Kelzer. Please subscribe for all future episodes.